So it is the 29th of October. I am with Dr. Kalhorn Kim.
Kalhorn Kim.
The president of the University of Cambodia and also a secretary of state in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
And international cooperation. Yes.
Dr. Kao, if I could start by asking you to provide an introduction of yourself and your background.
Okay. Well, I consider myself as an American trained, educated person because all my formal education was done in the U.S. from high school up all the way to the PhD program. And I have returned to Cambodia since January 1993, been working in think tank, in the very positions of the government. Today, of course, I wear several hats as the president of the University of Cambodia. I was the founder. Also, currently, I'm the Secretary of State for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation for my second term. Previously, I was advisor to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I used to serve also as a member of the Supreme National Economic Council for one term, now again rejoining it. Also, in addition, I'm also serving as a personal advisor to the Prime Minister. And also, I'm the Vice Chairman of the Board of Directors of Southeast Asia Television and Southeast Asia Radio. And of course, the president of this TV and radio also. So really, my long-term hobby, of course, is to build up a university. But at the same time, I try to do my best to contribute to the institutional development of the government, particularly in the area of foreign policy. I have been known to some extent as Mr. ASEAN for Cambodia. This is my strength. One of my strengths is to support the full integration of Cambodia to ASEAN and to really ensure that Cambodia has a regional role in this region. And at the same time, of course, my long-term hobby is to build a stronger and better generation of Cambodians, particularly younger generation of Cambodians who will make the difference in the future of this country.
And you have, in the course of your time here, set up a number of important institutions. Could you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. When I returned here, I must say I wanted to express my sincere appreciation to the Asia Foundation, which initially provided the grant for me to do research in Cambodia and, of course, led to my return to Cambodia back in January 1993. And at the time, I was with my other friend from the U.S., and we, in fact, set up a think tank and we named it as the former king, who's now the father king, basically what we call the CNU. Academy, the Presidio Raj Academy. And at the time, I was the second person in charge. And one of the projects, in fact, that we started back then, and they are still here today, the project, what I call at the time as the Cambodian what we call CPAT, is the Cambodian Public Accountability and Transparency Project. The idea at the time was to start looking ahead at the issue of governance. Back in 1993, during the UNTAC era, during the UN Transition Authority in Cambodia period, because I think people were focused so much on peace, on security and stability, on getting the transition moving ahead, on rehabilitation and all that. But as someone who was working at the think tank, our thing at the time was that the issue of good governance was important, was something that we had to think beyond during the UNTAC period. And we tried very hard to get sponsor from World Bank, Asian Development Bank, and others. They were not interested in governance at the time. And I must say, I was disappointed, you know. But then I was able to talk to the U.S. ambassador at the time, Ambassador Charles Twining, who was very eager, I must say. And we were able to get funding from USAID. Of course, USAID could not fund directly. It has to go through an American NGO, at the time, the Asia Foundation, which we worked with. And I must say, at the time, we were able to work with Mr. Calvin Klein. He was, at the time, was the country representative for the Asia Foundation. He was a very good man. They believe in what we were trying to do, and I think that's how we got that project funded. Eventually, of course, I left, you know, after almost 1 year. I decided that I wanted to move on, but I left behind a very important project with someone else, and that project was eventually took over by my very good friend. His name is Pok Than, and P-O-K and T-H-A-N. And he took over, and then it was split. And he went on to set up his own NGO called Center for Social Development. And today, this project continues, but perhaps with some modification changes, the project still survives. And of course, I move on to work for another think tank. At the time, it was still on the paper, called the Cambodian Institute for Cooperation and Peace, CICP. It was basically on the paper. I met with the board of directors, and they recruited me. They said, all right, you have one room, one table, two chairs, one fax machine. You take care. And from there, I was able to transform CICP into basically not just a think tank for Cambodia, but also a think tank as part of the regional network of the ASEAN Institutes of Strategic International Studies, called ASEAN-ISIS, which is basically a network of top think tanks in the region. And we were able to build on the niche at the time that, you know, we had to do something to, number one, completely end Cambodia isolation. Number two, support full integration of this country into the region and the global community. That was the overall rationale, you know, in the goal of this institute. We worked with the German Foundation, the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung, and they were pioneering, they were fully supporting us. And at the time, it was not easy because Cambodia at the time was very much polarized politically because of the different political parties. And as someone who had never joined political party, so I had to basically walk a fine line, you know, tightrope politically, in order to balance the different interests. Because that was the objective of the think tank, is to survive politically and to play a pivotal role, you know, basically trying to address issues of vital importance to Cambodia, but at the same time that would not be seen as threatened to the ruling authorities. And what was important was that for Cambodia was that, you know, we have to work among the competing interests and trying to look ahead what are the issues that will be affecting the national interest of Cambodia. So we're looking at ASEAN. Basically, it's something that all political parties were in favor of, you know. And we're looking at other issues ranging from military reform to, you know, basically other reform issues on the agenda of Cambodia. And sometimes it's not easy. For example, in 1997, Cambodia was already scheduled to become a full member of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN. And then we had the brief fighting in early July of that year. And on the, we have basically two political parties. One was very much in favor to go ahead join ASEAN, and another one said, all right, because of this fighting, we should not join ASEAN. and they're trying to lobby other ASEAN members to block the entry into ASEAN. Now, of course, what is the position of think tank? You know, should we go forward supporting, you know, Cambodia go ahead and join ASEAN, or should we support the other position? This is the kind of difficult decision we have to make. You know, where do we stand? What position do we take? You know, because before everyone was supporting full integration, but now it's a different picture. You know, so as a think tank, it was not easy. Sometimes we had to make difficult decisions, difficult choices. And the same thing, for example, on the issue of military reform. We were already giving some ideas to the World Bank, because the World Bank claimed that, oh, we have done great stories, fantastic, you know, successful stories in Africa and all that, Latin America, it can be transported and implanted in Cambodia, blah, blah, blah. You know. We warned them, you know, that there's no two countries alike, basically. You know, here maybe it's a different context. So they have to understand the local realities. And so we gave all of that. And then, of course, later on, they boycotted us. You know. And of course, we had to take the position, you know. But it was very difficult because in the NDA, the position that we took, sometimes we were not in line with those in power. You see? And but I think we were able to overcome such a difficult challenges and we move on. So in a way, as someone who's trying to build up CISP from ground zero, and I worked for CISP for 10 years. We build up from basically, like I say, one room, one table, two chairs to, you know, have its own place, its own property, its own building and all of that. Then I, at the highest CISP for 10 years, you know, during its 10th anniversary, I stepped down. Effectively asked the executive director and move on with time because I rejoined the government. And I was so busy anyway. But before that, I also was trying to set up this university, UNIS Cambodia. I was, when I returned in 1993, my passion was to teach, although I did not hold my PhD yet, I was still working on my dissertation. But I want to share something. I was not given a class. So I was kind of, oh, you know, what a loss, you know. And so I felt, you know, that something was wrong. So, but this something was, you know, I kept inside me that someday maybe I set up a school. You know, it was a small seed inside me, you know. This seed grew over time. And in 2002, this has grown already to become more a stronger desire. And I was meeting with a number of Cambodian intellectuals trying to get reactions, feedback and all that. And in this world, there's only two kinds of jobs. Either I work for myself or I work for somebody. So I decided, why don't I work for myself? I will set up my own university. And that's how it's all started. And then, you know, the whole idea is to mobilize the support, the intellectual support, and build up this goal, you know. And over time, I think we were able to bring in, but I was fortunate to meet my very dear brother from Japan, who gave all my full support. He was considered my co-founder. And he became the chancellor, and we set up, build up this university. I think we already staged, we're now into our seventh year. And it's getting stronger and better all the time. And in fact, we will move to a new campus before too long. So again, this is as someone who tried to build, first was the academy from scratch and nothing. And of course, the academy later on, it collapsed, but the project that I started, it went on and still survived. And we're done an institution called the Center for Social Development. And the think tank that I have built, CISP, is still there. And now I think this one is where I put all my energy, a lot of energy and a lot of priority, and it's growing. You know? So in a way, I'm one of the institutional builders for the reason. And of course, at the same time, I love what I do. I just don't have enough time to do what I do. And I have so much energy, so much passion for what I do. And I enjoy it because I'm happy to see students of this country learning something, you know, and they're doing something, and they after their graduation, they go on, they contribute to the society, to the world. There's nothing make me happier than this, you know, to see younger Cambodians coming in here, you know, walk out, you see, become a better person, and become the asset of the Cambodian society. And that's what I think is the most satisfaction I have.
And since when did you start working for the government, and what motivated you to join the civil service?
Well, you know, I did not really join. Some of my friends would say, Kalimon, you never really joined the government because you did not start up from someone, you know, at the bottom and move up. You parachute into. Yeah, that's what my friends told me. You parachute. So I think I can say that I joined the government at the right time and for the right reason. In other words, that what I was thinking when I was in the U.S., I say, you know, one of my two master degrees was on Southeast Asian studies. So I learned about the history, the politics, and all of this region. And then when I came here, started to work on ASEAN and Cambodia's foreign policy, it's just, you know, everything I learned was already there. You know? And when the Deputy Prime Minister, he was at the time Senior Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs, invited me to say, all right, I met him and say, why didn't you support the government, help the Ministry of Foreign Affairs become the advisor, you can play a crucial role. And I had no hesitation. I said, yes, I will be happy to make the contribution, whatever I can do. And that's how I move in. And when I start working, you know, I will need to see that something, that there is a contribution there. And at the time, Cambodia was preparing to become, to take over the chairmanship of ASEAN and to host ASEAN Summit, all the meetings that, you know, that the chair has to assume the responsibility of. And that's how I started out. But before that, I was, also playing an advisory role as advisor to the foreign minister, or as a member of the Supreme National Economic Council. Again, still in quote-unquote advisory position. And I love it because, you know, as someone who's trained in academics in the U.S., that I want to provide my ideas, whether they are relevant, practical, or useful, up to them to decide. But at least I can help think through some of the issues. And that's what I want to do. But then, of course, now I go beyond that already. I mean, more or less. You know, I have been playing actively in ASEAN because I serve as a senior official leader for Cambodia in charge of ASEAN affairs since 2001. And I just stepped down late September of this year. Basically, you know, in ASEAN is that you have these group, or what we call SOM leaders, S-O-M, leaders, SOM leaders, which comprises senior officials from the Minister of Foreign Affairs of all the 10 ASEAN member states. What they do, they meet regularly. They basically do most of the so-called dirty work. All the issues that are sensitive political, they debate, they discuss openly. They negotiate, and then they pass on to the foreign minister of ASEAN and into the leaders. But this is the group where they trying to clear the deck. You know, and that's what we did. We did a lot of work at that level. And one other role that I play, which I really much appreciate that responsibility, was I was asked to be the representative of Cambodia in the negotiation for the ASEAN Charter. You know, the charter of this regional organization is really the new era of ASEAN. And I was given the responsibility of representing Cambodia to be one of the 10 negotiators. What they called a member of the high-level task force to draft the ASEAN Charter. you know, because right now ASEAN has become now a legal, basically a legal rule-based organization. And you know, negotiating with all ASEAN member states is not that simple, because we all fight for different interests. But in the day, we have to come to terms, you know, what is collectively ASEAN interest. And that's really a 1 year of you know, ongoing discussion, sometimes even past midnight, arguing from the position. And at the end of the day, we delivered product. We delivered what we were asked to do by the ASEAN foreign minister and by the leaders of ASEAN. And that's what we have now, is the ASEAN charter. So I was quite happy that I represent Cambodia in that regard. Yes.
And going back now into a little bit into the 1990s, yeah. A little bit of history, I'd ask you to put on your academic hat.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about the sort of the importance of human resources.
Yeah.
And when the post-93 government came into power, there was a huge lack of trained people to do the work of government.
Yes.
What kinds of policies did the government engage in to build capacity, or where did the human resources come from?
Yeah. Well, you have to understand the background of Cambodia. Then Cambodia suffered from, one was the long period of civil war and foreign intervention. Second, an extended period of international isolation. And third, this is where is very much a key factor. And you know, the genocide by the Khmer Rouge, which this country lost so many intellectuals and human power. And the society in the 80s and the 90s was essentially a byproduct of that. The society belonged what we had left behind, what the society left behind as a result of war, international sanction, the isolation, and of course genocide, you know. So that's what we had. And so after about in the early 1990s, and I must say that the state of Cambodia is trying to build up already infrastructure as much as possible. And that's why the so-called quote-unquote existing administrative structures, the term that used by UNPAC at the time was that they're trying to neutralize the EAS, the existing administrative structures, which under the state of Cambodia. But at the same time, of course, you know, with the opening of Cambodia, you need a lot of more human resources. And at the time, you could see that, you know, there were people from overseas, Cambodia from overseas returned. You have international experts were coming in, consultants, and so on and so forth. But that was then. I think over times, after, particularly I think after 1993, 1998, things start to move along. And I must say that this is really, for example, the most pressing issue at the time was to ensure political stability, peace and security for the country, so that the priority of the country to focus on development. And I must say the leadership at the time was that, you know, today I think that we have the current prime minister who basically ended the Cambodian conflict, particularly ended the Khmer Rouge through what he called win-win policy, by not using, not firing a single bullet, but by fully integrating the former Khmer Rouge into the Cambodian society. And by doing that, I think in 1998, brought the end of, well, brought a new era to Cambodia. Because between 1421 to 1998, Cambodia was never under one leadership. The country was always contested by different factions between 1421 and 1998. For example, from 1993 to 1998, the Khmer Rouge was always had their strongholds, you know, challenging the government all the time. But Prime Minister Hun Sen, because Aung Thak could not, you know, end the Khmer Rouge. The UN could not, you know, bring down the Khmer Rouge, complete demise of Khmer Rouge. But this policy of the demise of Khmer Rouge basically brought about by the Bun Bun policy of Prime Minister Hun Sen, Samdech Hun Sen. And I think this is very, very good. And then after that, you know, you couldn't imagine this country that you can travel anywhere throughout the country 24 hours without fear of the security. It's like right now, I shouldn't say this, but this is the kind of, in the Philippines, you go to the Philippines, you go to shopping mall, hotels, they check you for security reasons. Indonesia, even Thailand. Cambodia, no. You see? This was unthinkable or unbelievable, you see, because of this peace, stability, and security. Now we can focus on the priority today, and that is on development and reform, and particularly in catching up with other countries in the region through the narrowing development gap, through capacity building, human resource development. But like I say, you know, the determining factor for development is going to be the people. And that's why the prime minister of this country, the government, is focused so much on building quality human resources. And that's why every time we're talking about a graduation, we're talking about this training, that training, we're talking about how can this society move on with a more developed human resources. And that's, I think, that's why I think one of the reasons why for us here at the UNESCO Cambodia is that we want to make a positive contribution in this regard.
And could you elaborate a little bit about, you mentioned the win-win policy.
Yes.
Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. The win-win policy is the policy of Prime Minister Samdech Hun Sen, who believed that the best way to fully integrate Cambodia and to end the Khmer Rouge is only through integration. Bring them in. No more the use of the military to try to capture a stronghold of the Khmer Rouge, no. And also without, you know, creating any mistrust, is that the Khmer Rouge, all right, if you control that area, that's fine. You can continue to control that area, no problem. But you have to change uniform. All your troops switch. You put on the government uniform. You have to respect the law, the policy of the government. Even follow them. I think over time, you know, everything's transformed. And the whole idea was that it's not really to challenge the Khmer Rouge so much, but to bring their own demise by transforming them. And through this policy, the government was able, the Prime Minister was able to ensure the top Khmer Rouge leaders, they were staying in certain places. And when the UN tribunal on the Khmer Rouge took place, we know who to invite to come to the court. So they were asked to come to the court. They could not escape, you see. So it was a very smart policy. And the way, because if we continue on fighting, we probably, you know, this issue of insecurity, conflict, war would still move on, you know, go on. But that, you know, there was not even a single shot of a gun, you know. There's no firing at all. And at the same time, you don't have to worry to look for where is the ex-top Khmer leaders. Because they knew where they were, and then they were able to brought in to the court. You know, one of the most challenging questions at times, all right, you can set up the court, this special chambers. But can you bring the ex-Khmer Rouge leader to court? Who going to bring them to court? You see? Where are they going to stay? That issue, this kind of question will already resolve because by through this integration, this women policy, you know, that the PM would able to come up with this policy and also to, in a way, win the heart and mind of the hardcore commercial, you know, elements. Because there's no way you can win by bullets, but only through the wounds of the heart and mind.
And what kind of settlement package were the leaders afforded to reintegrate back into society? What was the policy in that?
I think it really was not really a package of anything, but basically to build more infrastructure, link up roads, bridges, you know, make sure that they would be given regular training, seminars, you know, they make sure they understand the policy, the laws that are now existing. So in a way, you know, that they were not isolated, they were not outcast, they were not treated differently. No, they were treated the same. And I think over time, trust was able to build. That was the most important commodity, I think, trust. Do they trust the government? Yes, because the government trusted them. So I think that was really the key word, the key, the most decisive factors that they were able to trust the government. Yeah.
And were any of the senior leaders of the Khmer Rouge offered any positions in the government as an incentive to?
Well, only the lower elements. They were in charge of like the district, right? But right now, one of the ex, he was the bodyguard of the Pol Pot. I think he is now is the, because his area is now being made as a province, so he's now a governor. But I think it's he's really at a lower rank, you know. And I think for anyone, they could have been serving the position anyway, because for fear, for other reasons. But I think we try to look beyond this, that what happened during Khmer Rouge era, basically, it was a policy from the top, you know. So that was the idea, is to let's go for only those who were highly responsible, the top echelon of the Khmer Rouge leadership. That's what we should focus on, and I'm happy that our government focusing on that. Because if you start lowering down to, at all levels, that would be a big mistake. And I can say that because right now, there are elements at the court, they want to lower the net, or they want to make sure the net is, the hole is getting smaller. They want to capture everything. I think it would be a big mistake. Because you don't want to unravel what has been a difficult process of building peace, building political stability and security in this country. What we have done. And so I think that's quite important, and that's why we need to close this chapter as soon as possible and move on. You know, Cambodia cannot be spent all the time, priority and everything on the past. You know, and I can say this, yeah.
And in reintegrating the Khmer Rouge and building up institutions as a result and creating peace, was there any concern that now that you've given a position of, say, district head or district chief to somebody, later on, if you try to remove them, they might go back to a more conflictual position.
No,
the
no. I don't think there is a policy of removal. But there is what we call an overall administrative policy. Everyone, regardless of their political background or whatever background, you reach an age, you step down, you retire. It's normal. You see? And the same thing, I think they will be asked to come to the capital for training and all of that like everybody else. You see? Regardless of where they are, where they come from. So I don't think the government has any policy discrimination. It's same policy applies to all.
And so moving beyond the 1990s now, the objective in the 1990s, between 93 and 98, was to create peace and stability.
Yeah.
And after 1998, how did the main priorities of the government change now that peace had been achieved? What were the the priorities then for state building?
Well, for Cambodia, I think the overall priority was to reduce policy, I mean to reduce poverty. Fighting poverty, combating poverty was one of the most important priorities in the country. And I think the government was right, because we don't want to see any Cambodian going hungry. You know, anyone should not be going hungry in this country, because during the colonial era, we know what starvation was like. We know what it really means. And so I think what we're trying to do is to really, you know, focus on the people. That's what's one of the most important factors. Second, I think, is to really build a society that everyone is part of society. So we must build infrastructure, linking provinces, rural areas into the city. And that's really quite important, particularly infrastructure development. Roads, bridges, hospitals, schools, electricity, clean water, you know, all of that were basically top priorities. And I think people were quite happy. And I think even more recently, IRI, the International Republican Institute, they did a survey. And what they asked, you know, what people think about the country. Is this country going in the right direction? A large majority of them, more than 70 or 80% thought the country was in the right direction, because they believed the government have done the right thing. And in trying to reduce poverty, build infrastructure, people don't have to travel days, you know, many hours from the capital to the countryside, or they're trying to bring in food into country to the capital. It's very difficult. They have to travel a long way and all of that. That has been cut back. You know, the travel time has been cut back. Transportation costs have been reduced. All of that. And I thought that's quite important. Also, what is important is that the focus also is on export. You know, we believe in this basic fundamental. Export creates jobs. Import loses jobs, you know. So the idea is to export as much as possible, provide jobs. That's why the textile garment sector was able to grow in a way. You know, workers, you know, 100,000 were able to work in factories, making some their earning. But at the same time, the priority also comes back to poverty reduction is to build the agriculture sector. You know, trying to upgrade irrigation system was also a top priority for the government, because if Cambodians have access to water, they can do so much all year round. See, water is so important to many Cambodian farmers. And so that's another thing that the government is trying to do, is to really invest heavily into the irrigation system, and also make sure that they're able to plan rice more than just one time per year, maybe twice or three times per year, in trying to make sure that they were able to increase the yield. And that's why in the past 4 or 5 years, you've seen that Cambodia has been able to export rice once again. You know, from a rice deficit during the period of conflict to a rice exporting, a rice surplus, you know. And we went back to the position that Cambodia was in the 60s. And that was a remarkable policy. Yes, and I think that's something that also, that's why during this economic and financial crisis, you know, global economic financial crisis, even the UK-based intelligence unit thought there would be political unrest, and so forth. So in Cambodia, this is highly unstable, you know, what would this so-called ivory tower analysis, you see, that they don't understand the reality on the ground, and, you know, yeah. People go back to the countryside, they have the family structure there, agriculture is strong, and they can absorb, you know. See?
And in terms of building up the administration, strengthening the institutions of the state to be able to govern better, what has the government focused on since that since that period?
Well, you know, civil society always claim, and I think there is some degree of truth, that they were operating in this country in the 80s and 90s. Because I think you're always trying to argue that the royal state was changing. Before, the notion of state was also evolving, because state was, its role was limited because of sanction, because of war, priority was not there, and all that. So civil society was able to assume certain responsibility. But over time, this was changing. State was able to build up institutions and then also get individuals, civil servants to move in, And I think I would say number one, we have been able to lay down the foundation, I think the legal foundation. You can go back and see how many laws the parliament had passed since 93. That's a lot. All right? Because before there was a legal vacuum to some degree. That was also filled in the gap. There were old laws also replaced with new ones that are more relevant. Second, the public administration. It was able to build up all also. We could control better, you know, through payroll, for example. And at the same time, there's a clear division of labor and responsibility. You know, who's in charge of what, you know, what ministry doing what and all that, yes. So really, there's a clear division of labor. And for example, just give one particular example. Cambodia before, because of war, we had no concept, no culture of paying taxes, right? Well, paying tax, I mean, collecting tax from people is not easy for any society. So what is important here is that building the institution and manpower that will be able to collect revenues for the government is one of the most challenging tasks of the day for the government. But I think over time, the government has been able to do that now. Government now, every year, tax collection increasing. It's good. I think it's good. It's getting better all the time. Yeah? Because if we're able to establish rules and regulations, laws, get more people and everyone here to paying taxes, it's a good thing. You know? And the administration to be able to collect taxes, it's good. And I think that's just one part, for example. And also, you know, the ability to reduce leakages is also important. You see, you collect more, and you reducing the potential leakage is also quite important. You see, and I think I must say the Prime Minister has been working very hard to do that, and it's not been not easy. At the same time, you know, reform here, for example, cutting, you know, a big armed forces to a sizable armed forces is not easy. What do you do with them? During the time of war, you need them. During the time of peace, you send them away. You know, there is a moral, social, and political responsibility for the government. So to demobilize them over a period of time, is the responsibility of society as a whole, not just the government. And we have to make sure that we train the soldiers before they being asked to give up their job as, you know, soldiers and then go back to become useful to society, see? So that's also a big responsibility to, on the one hand, is to integrate all the factional forces of the early 1990s to build a modern professional armed forces. Not easy. Not easy at all. And also to reduce the number, to reduce the ranks you know. I must say, it was to some degree, you know, it was a big challenge, but I think the Prime Minister was able to do that. And even himself, he stepped down, you know, as a real leadership now. Take all control of the military. You can believe that is good. Because for a democratic state, that's what you need, is a civil leadership over the military. See? And so in that sector, the same thing in the sector of police. You know, again, another reform to the sector too. And so every sector, there's a need to some institutions are entirely new. They knew. Other institution, they're there they, for some time, we need to reform. You know, and so really, and also, we're not just doing for ourselves here in Cambodia. We're trying to harmonize what we do here at the regional and global level. Because we join ASEAN, we are member WTO. So everything we do here must be harmonized with the rest. Right? And that's really good in a way, because our integration, in a way, could be seen as a positive pressure for domestic reform. See? Because, you know, what we do here is the same, for example, university. Our degrees eventually have to be compatible with the rest in the region. You know, our credits, our course could be transferred somewhere else. See? So whatever we do here, it's not. It must be of value, same value out there. See, so I in a way, you know, I mean, for Cambodia, I must say we have come a long way in a short period of time, despite our incredible challenges of the past. You know, if you people always compare Cambodia to Malaysia, to Singapore, to Thailand, I mean, they often forgot where we were, and we always compare with those guys. And I think they must say, "Wow, this is—it's good, you know, that Cambodia is being put in same, in the same box, the same context." I think, but they oftentimes forgot our history.
On the issue of the reintegration of factions from the mid-1990s, what were the major challenges in doing that? Because there were quite a few political factions.
Yeah, I mean, number one, everyone would like to inflate the number. If I have X number, they say I have Y number, all right? If we have many top official ranking, top ranking, I have also X number top ranking too. So when you integrate into together, my goodness. I shouldn't say it, but there's a lot of chiefs, but not many Indians. Yeah. See?
So has the government tried to now move away from
that? Oh yes, I must just say the Prime Minister was able to reform this with speed. You know, with speed. I mean, we don't have a lot of time. You know, and this was done incredibly very well, because integrating forces of different factions and trying to create one single armed forces, and that was not easy. But this government did it. Yeah. And now, not just that, we're sending blue helmets, our blue helmets, to Sudan. You know, we have now the mining experts under the UN peacekeeping operation. We're just about to send more to Chad and Central African Republic. You know, I mean, this. Yeah, it's our not just international. This is our regional, our international role now, as well. I mean, recently, we now just yesterday, right? We were voted as a member of the World Heritage Committee for the first time. See, and we never joined this committee since the first day at the UN. You see.
So on that point of integration, you mentioned that you were deeply involved in the ASEAN,
yes.
Into Cambodia's integration into ASEAN. What were the kinds of requirements that you had to make sure that Cambodia fulfilled before it could join the ASEAN? Were there any domestic changes that you had to pilot and make sure that they took place?
Well, you know, they always ask us to join ASEAN, you had to agree with whatever ASEAN been doing since 67. And you know, we were required to set up all our embassy in all the ASEAN capitals. That's why we make our annual contribution to ASEAN. We have agreed to all the rules, regulations. For example, we must attend all ASEAN meetings. And the agreement is that any ASEAN meeting you don't attend, you agree to whatever agreed at the meetings. But anyway, I think we play our important role for ASEAN. And I must say that we have been doing what we have been supposed to do, and that is to, you know, we have equal footing in this regional organization. And if you look at ASEAN today, Prime Minister Hun Sen, he is the longest serving democratic elected leader, right, in ASEAN. He is the longest serving democratic elected leader. Because I cannot say the other one, because the longest serving leader will be Sultan Brunei. But I say democratically elected.
And so in the realm of domestic reforms, what would you say have been the biggest successes to date, looking back over the last 15, 16 years that you've been in Cambodia? What have been the biggest successes?
Number one, liberalization of many, many different policies. Education, for example. Before, it was basically all state institutions, all state, you know, like universities and schools. The prime said, no, we had to open up. Let's liberalize the sector of education. Private sector, welcome to compete and to improve the quality. And that's why today you see, you know, schools from university to kindergarten, that's private school offer to the people of this country. And I think this is really a successful policy, because both private and public schools and university, they are allowed to compete. And it's good. Competition improves quality. Competition, can bring down the prices. I think that is very healthy. And of course, competition create more choices, offer more choices. And I think this really has been important policies. The other thing, for example, open sky policy. Prime Minister was criticized initially for initiating an open sky policy. I think it's successful, because right now, tourists don't have to fly to Phnom Penh alone. They can fly direct to Siem Reap. We bring more tourists into Cambodia than ever before. The number of tourist arrival increase annually, despite economic difficulties, you know, globally. And it's good, because more tourists coming here, it creates more economic opportunities for the society as a whole, right? Another successful policy is the integration policy of this government. Let Cambodia is fully integrated in the region and global community. We work with everyone. We must connect our economy with the big economy. We cannot have, Cambodia is not an island of itself, but we have to link ourselves. Connectivity, link up our structure with neighboring countries. Yeah. Link this society, by roads, by rails, by air links, or ICT, whatever. Let's do that. And I think that's why the vision of the leaders' country is to link Cambodia with the rest of the region and the world. I think this integration policy is one of the successful policies of Cambodia today. All right? Let's go on to other sectors. In the legislative area, we try to fill in the vacuum where there was no policy before. There was no legislation before. All right? That's what we do. The same thing, I think, also looking at the banking sector. All right? There are now more banks in Cambodia offering more banking services, financial services to the people. It's good. It bring down the interest rate even better. Before, interest rate basically, you know, quite high. So I think something is working on improving this area as well. Now, of course, you look at also we're trying to do is to improve the service delivery to the people. And that is really important because, you know, the ability to provide more services to the people. For example, electricity. We're expanding, you know, services in clean water, sanitation, and electricity and all of that to more people. And that is quite important. The same thing right now, I'm talking about education, come back to education. There's more schools now being built. There's more teachers now are in classrooms. Before, students in rural areas had to walk in long distance just to go to school. Now that has been made possible. So I think in every areas that we can see that there are improvements. And that's why I must say, all with all this improvement, it translates to one thing. More votes for the ruling party. Because the ruling party is in control power, right? It's in power. So they need more work. It means that people enjoy, see more, you know, what they have done. So it translates to more votes. See? And that's why in 2008, the ruling party was able to win more than 2/3 majority of the votes. See? I'm just putting that into more, you know, an election.
And are there any areas that come to your mind where the government has not been as successful as it would have hoped to be?
Well, of course, you know, I would just say that there are many areas in government that have been very successful. But of course, there are areas that the government continues to try to improve more. You know, for example, combating poverty is not a short-term policy. Bringing down the number of people who are surviving on very little income has been a top priority. The government always trying to do more in this area. Second, of course, Cambodia could even produce more rice and more cash crops in, say, in the area of agriculture. That could be improving more. In the educational area, of course, right now we could increase more quality. Right? And the government continue to build more schools because even many thousand more schools have been built over time. There are still more needed. Okay. The same thing, of course, in the areas create more jobs. We need to do more to create more jobs. And that's always a priority of the government, to bring more investment to the country. So more jobs can be created. It's always, you know, the task. The same thing, we could improve the civil services by paying more, for example. It's always has been the top priority of the government to pay more state employees and all that. I think the whole idea is that we have done a lot in the past 20 years, but in the past 10 years. But still, we still need to do more to build a modern state of Cambodia. See? And that's what this government is trying to do, is to, for every mandate of 5 years, we need to improve as much as possible in all areas. And we'll move on, try to build more. And I must say that you look at Cambodia today, there's a lot of changes and transformation in society as a whole. And that's why even Prime Minister of Singapore recently said at the East Asia Summit, he in Hua Hin, Thailand. Is it, you know, new members of ASEAN. They make a lot of progress. So people come and see the society, you know. They see there are a lot of progress. But yes, there's a lot we need to do more. Well, certainly, you know, poverty is one area, human resource development is another area, continue to improve governance is another area. Delivery of services, you know, should be even continue to be improved. So again, it depends on what we want to look at. I mean, certainly there's a lot of things we need to do. It's an endless process, you know. Like every time I visit the U.S., everywhere you travel is always road construction all the time. You know, yeah, there's always repairing this road or paving new road or whatever. There's always ongoing. And I use that as an analogy. It's always, you know, the government is always in the state of reforming, you know, doing new things but reform the old things and keep moving all the time. It's not static. Everything is evolving. So Cambodia, I think, like other states and regions, always evolving in terms of development, in terms of progress, in terms of catching up, but also, you know, of building a modern state that will serve the needs and interests of the society as a whole.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.